So we're doing a Tosos in Megillah, continuing our topic about that when it comes to Shabbos, doing a mitzvah of lulav and shofar in Megillah, the Rabbanon made a gezerah, a decree that you don't do these mitzvahs on Shabbos because they involve a person. Everyone's obligated to do the mitzvah. Not everyone knows how to do the mitzvah. So what's going to happen is, oftentimes a guy will take his shofar or his lulav or his megillah to an expert in order to check it out because he's trying to do the mitzvah. And he's going to end up carrying it and violating the Surah of Mavir, carrying 4 amos and Rishus Rabban. So therefore, the Rabbanan said, they just canceled the mitzvah. It's not worth it. It's not worth the mitzvah if it's going to end up having people violating Shabbos. So they knocked it out. So the question is, so Tosas asks, what about Mila? Because we know we do Mila on Shabbos. Now why don't you say that perhaps a guy is going to get carried away and carry the knife? Right? And is he going to have to not know how to do it exactly? He's going to carry the knife? So similar type of concern. So why don't we have that gezerah there? So he says, so Tosas says like this. It's Tosas, the second Tosas on Daled Amud Beis and Megillah. Avol Mila b'Shabbos ein lidchos. But we're not going to push off Mila on Shabbos. Circumcision. Dehachamira. Because it is strict. It's very strict. Shekein nichrusu aleha shlosh etzvei brisos. Because there were 13 covenants which were made regarding the mitzvah of Mila. Okay? And since it's so strict, that there were 13 brisos, therefore we don't push it aside. Vegam ina damal elam ken hayabaki. This is a kind of yeshu davar. And also, a guy is not going to say, "Here, I have my mila knife, and I'm ready to do the mila. I'm not sure exactly how to do it. I'm going to bring my knife to the mole to show me, tell me what to do," because you don't do mila if you know what you're doing. So if you're only experts to Mila. So your guy could basically bring his shofar. Yeah, I have my shofar, I want to blow a shofar. So I'm just going to bring it to the expert and he'll tell me what to do. But a guy's not going to do it with Mila. Rather Mila, he'll just go to the expert. The expert will do it, and the expert has his own knife. You don't have to bring your knife to the expert, he has his own knife. So it's all together. You don't have the concern when it comes to Mila. Okay, you don't have that concern when it comes to Mila. But you do have it by these other mitzvahs. Okay. So I guess the second answer is somewhat of a practical answer, right? The thing is, the nature of the chashash is based upon a certain type of a mitzvah where a person who's not an expert will do it under the guidance of an expert, and therefore he'll carry his thing. So you don't have that by other mitzvahs. Fine. But what about this first answer? The first answer is funny. It says, because there are 13 brises. What's he even talking about? So there's a Rambam on this. Not on this exact question, but on that idea of 13 brises by Mila. So it's the last myth Rambam in Mila. I think the facts here, there's a certain premise, is that you do a mitzvah, the person who does the mitzvah uses his own instrument. So if you're blowing shofar, then you use your shofar. If like say germs, if the expert's blowing shofar, he'll use the shofar. If you're doing the mila, you'll use your own knife. If the moel's the expert's doing it, he'll use his knife. So in these mitzvahs, the problem is you're going to want to do it with your own object. So you're going to have to go to the expert to guide you how to do it. You're not going to him to do it for you, because then there's no concern. He has his own thing. But the thing is, maybe you'll go to him, and he'll to him to guide you how tell you how to do it. Apparently, the person likes to do the mitzvah himself. Right? He'd rather do it himself. That's why the person wants to do it. Okay. So the Rambam is in Hilchos Mila, Perek Gimel Halacha, Tas. Okay. Maybe let's do Chas also. How about last two halachas in Hilchos Mila? It's at the very end of Ava. It's very little, so it's easy to miss. Me'usa hi ha'arla. an arla, uncircumcised person, or lack of circumcision is disgusting. Shenizganu ba harasha'im. Because the rasha'im are degraded regarding it. Shenemar ki kol ha'goyim areilam. It's because all the goyim are uncircumcised. So it's like a derogatory reference to goyim. So you see it's that arla is like a disgusting. Like that is disgusting. V'gedola hi amila, and great is mila, she'lo nikra Avram Avinu shalem ad shemal. Because he wasn't, Avram Avinu wasn't called complete until he got mila. She'ne'emar hisaylech lefanai ve'heyei samim. That he should go before me and be complete. Ve'et nabrisi ben yu'enecha, and then I'll give my covenant between you and I.
Right. Excuse me, where are we? Where is this Busha?
Where am I reading?
Yeah.
In Rambam and Hilchos Mila, Perak Gimel Halacha Chas.
Okay, sorry.
And anybody who, denies the bris, the covenant of Avram, v'hiniach arlaso, o mashcha, and he leaves his arla, leaves his uncircumcised, leaves himself uncircumcised, or I think it means where he tries to make it look like he's uncircumcised, afal pi sheyesh bo Torah ma'asim tovim, harbe, even though he may have lots of Torah, like he may have Torah and good deeds, lots of them, lots of Torah, lots of good deeds, in l'chelek olam haba. There's no portion in the world to come if you deny the Mila. Okay? If you get rid of the bris of Avram Avinu. Interesting, right? Pretty serious. Bo'u re'eh, next halacha. Come and see kama chamura Mila. See how strict Mila is. Shalom nitle l'moshe Rabbeinu afilu shah achas, af bishay v'darach. So Moshe Rabbeinu was not spared for it, even for one moment, even though he was on the road. So it means that basically he because he didn't do Mila to his son, so he was almost killed. Okay, and if not for his wife, Tzipora, stepping in and doing it, he would have been killed. So even though he's the great Moshe Rabbeinu, and he was on the road, and he was tired and busy and whatever with the road, still, the great Moshe Rabbeinu was almost killed because he was somewhat lax in Mitzvah Mila. Okay, so you see that how great the Mitzvah Mila is. Okay, it wouldn't have happened apparently for any mitzvah. V'chol mitzvot haTorah nichrasu aleihen shalosh brisos bavad. All the mitzvahs of the Torah, there were three covenants on them. Shenemar, Eila Dibre Abris Asher Tziva Hashem Es Moshe Lechros Es Bnei Yisrael Beretz Moav Milvad Abris Asher Kras Itam B'Chorev. So this is a bris, the covenant in Moav, beside for the one in Chorev. V'shem Omar Atem Nitzav Mayom Lavrcha B'Bris Hashem Lekacha Ha'ishol Shbrisos. So there's a bris in Moav, in Chorev, and in Nitzavim. So apparently there are three times where the Torah says about a covenant between the Jews and Hashem. Three times that the Jewish people on the Torah. It's a covenant for the Jews keeping the Torah. But regarding Mila, Nichrasu Shalosh Esrei Brisos Im Avram Avinu. There were 13 brises, 13 covenants with Avram Avinu. Okay? So it says, what are these 13 covenants? So he's quoting Psukim from Avram, all there in Bereshit, Lachavay or whatever, right? It says, Ve'edna brisi ben yuvenecha, ani hine brisi yitcha. Like he must say, brisi ben yuvenecha. The bris olam, v'atos brisi tishmar, zos brisi asher tishmeru, v'ayelos bris, v'ayelos bris b'vsarchem, the bris olam, as brisi hefar, like he must say, brisi osa ito, the bris olam, as brisi yakim yitzchak. So in the course of this one parak, in about 20 some odd psukim, the word bris appears 13 times. Okay? I will establish, I'll give my bris between me and him, and this is your covenant, and I'll establish the covenant, it'll be a covenant forever, and I'll guard my covenant, and keep saying it 13 times, says the word bris in the same story. Okay, the word bris keeps coming up 13 times. So he's saying is, Apparently it's saying it 13 times because there are 13 Prisas Brisas, 13 signing or agreements, covenants that were enacted regarding the Mesavmila. The saying is that the whole Torah, there were only 3 covenants. And Mila, there were 13 covenants. It's a lot more. Right? A lot more. So see how strict, how strong Mrs. Mila is. And this is what our Tosfos is referring to. Since Mila is so chamor, so important, because of all these 13 verses, therefore the Chum did not want to knock it out. Didn't want to knock it out. Didn't want to say, you may carry. Okay, because it's so important. Okay, yeah. Well, the thing is like this. It's okay, that's a good question. So then he's asking, does it mean that it's 13 brises, or it's one bris that the word is mentioned 13 times? So, in fact, it's bringing psukim that the word is mentioned 13 times. But he does say that there were 13 krisas brises. There were 13 covenants made. Right? And also, not only does he say it, it's hard to understand. Okay, so that says the word bris 13 times. Big deal. How does that do? What does that show? It's a story. It tells it 13 times. So who cares? Just context dictates that it says 13 times. So what does that prove? It's more important because it says the word. Who cares how many times it says the word? Right? But I think he's deducing from the fact that Chazal deduced, from the fact that it says it 13 times, it's so repetitive, usually about the word bris, is that there's really 13 brises. Right? And that's the way it conveys it to us in the Torah. Doksha Basav is that it just says the word 13 times. But in reality, it means there were 13 brises. What they were, we have no idea. Right? And that's part of the problem. What does that even mean? I guess we don't even know what a bris means. Right? What is a bris? What is a covenant? What does that mean? But what's 13 and 3? And a whole Torah has 3? You know, one of the mitzvahs of Torah is bris, is Mila. So I guess whatever, it means the rest of the Torah, something like that, right? But strange, something that's strange, right? You would never imagine. What do we mean to say? Is that Mila is more important than every single thing in the whole Torah? Is that what it's saying? Sounds like it. I mean, okay. I mean, you could say that. But it's interesting, huh? So that's just strange in its own right. What's the deal? For this whole 13 verses deal. And then, what do you guys think about how it's regarding, you know, how it has his answer?
Shot, I mean, it right.
Should be over something. Yeah, okay, good. So there's Danny just saying, well, yeah, but it's very nice. It's very, very important. But still, I mean, are you concerned or you're not concerned? If you're concerned, the guy's going to carry, the guy's going to carry. So who cares how important it is? And if you're not concerned, then you're not concerned. Second answer is addressing the problem, because it's saying, no, we're not concerned by Mila. But I mean, the first answer has to make sense in its own right. First answer, I mean, if you're not, are you concerned? You're not concerned. Who cares how important it is? So, what do you think about? Maybe we should just try to address, I think, the second question first. This is a question about Tosos. Is what could you deduce from that question? You know, Tosos is saying it's very important. I mean, what do you have to say from what he says? You know, based on that question. Okay, that's a good point. I mean, it's another question you could ask. Another question you could ask is, so you can do Mila, you just do it the next day. Right? It's not like you're knocking it out, you're just doing it the next day. So I mean, implicit in Tosfos saying is it's so important they didn't even want to push it to the next day. Right? I mean, which it is true that Mila Bismano is a phenomenon, doing it in its time. But I mean, it's interesting. It's not like all or none. It's not even that you're knocking it out. It's just that it's going to not be the full mitzvah of Bismano at its time, at eighth day. But I'm saying, but still, it doesn't really help because, okay, fine. So it's very important to do it in its time. But still, but are you worried or are you not worried? Yeah. Let me give you an example. Which I think maybe will. I don't think it's such a strong question, because I'll give you an example. Let's say you say a guy, you'd say, oh, I don't go bungee jumping because it's dangerous. How can you go bungee jumping? Are you crazy? It's dangerous. And let's say the guy will say back to you, he'll say, well, driving a car is even more dangerous. Right? Something like that. These arguments, right? People have these arguments. Statistically, speaking, a higher percentage of people who drive cars or something like that, or die than people who bungee jump, or something to that effect. Right? I don't know if it's really true. I'm just making that up. But people who bungee jump make that up also. So, right? But maybe it's true, right? So what does the guy respond back to that? Yeah, what am I doing? I drive. I mean, I understand driving is dangerous, but I have to weigh. There's a risk-reward ratio. So if I'm never going to drive, I just can't live like that. So therefore, I say, even though the risk, maybe the risk is 1 in 1,000, or whatever. But look, I have to take my chances. I can't live having to weigh. It's not a quality of life issue. This is I have to take a chance. But in bungee jumping, you don't have to do it. Why are you doing it? So it's just to for no good reason, just to decide to throw yourself into a situation of risk. So it's not worth it. So of course he'll say, well, I have to bungee jump, and then or it really affects my life if I go bungee jumping. I really love it, and that's why the argument deteriorates, because I see one guy values bungee jumping, the other guy doesn't, and one guy values driving more, whatever. So but the point, the line of reasoning though, I think is correct. Is that you don't just say, well, bottom line is, what percentage of things do you think are dangerous? What's the percent risk? 1 in 1,000 will die, you're not going to do it? It doesn't work that way. I mean, it depends what you're getting, what it's worth. So risks, when you're dealing with a risk, you have to consider, well, what would it involve if I stop doing it? So if 1 in 1,000 risk, but the other option is for me not to drive and to have to walk all the way to wherever I want to go, so then I'll take that chance. That's a chance that's worth taking. So what am I going to do? Knock out driving? But if it's something like which is easy to knock out and doesn't affect my life, so then I'll do it. And I don't think a person being irrational when he does that. That's just an idea. Any decision involves economics of properly assessing both sides of the coin. Okay, so risk, in a decision of risk, you always have to consider what's the percentage of the risk and what am I giving up by not taking the risk. Right, and in your head, you have some sort of formula going on in your head with which you make these decisions. You may not actually know it, but that's somehow what's going on, right? Some sort of intuition about the formula, whatever it is, right? How important is it to you, and how risky is it? So that being the case, I think the same thing is true here. That it's like zero isn't an absolute. That look. There's a chashash. If there's a chashash, then we have to make the gezera. Chashash is true. There's a worry that it will lead to hotza. But it's not saying that every time a guy blows a shofar on Shabbos is going to have the carrying. It means it could lead to it. How often? I don't know. Close. Often enough to make a gezera. And look, and we'll knock out mitzvah shofar. We'll knock out the shofar 1 out of every 7 years, whatever, every 2 out of 7 years on Shabbos, one of the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, we won't blow shofar. Okay, and Megillah will push off, and Lulav we won't do that day. Okay, that's what will end up happening. And we're okay with that. But apparently the risk to Shabbos, the percentage risk, whatever it is, and the concern and the significance of Shabbos is such that it warrants taking such a measure. Okay? But in Milah, because Milah is so important, so very important, so even though if you have the same exact risk, it doesn't warrant knocking out Mila, or even pushing it to the next day, okay, because it's so important, okay? And second of all, Mila is a lesser risk. That's the second answer. There's two answers, because those are two factors. Two factors is how important is it and how much of a risk is it. First of all, Mila is much, much more important, and we don't want to push it aside. Second of all, Mila is a lesser risk. So they go together. I don't know if they're two totally separate answers. They go together. But it's interesting. I mean, you would not necessarily have known this. That's what I'm saying. It's like, I'm not saying that it had to be this way. You could have said that if there's a certain risk of violating Shabbos, then you have to make zero. Period. But it's not true. You have to weigh the other side. What are you causing? What are you causing? Like, for instance, halachos, like a gezerah that the tzibur can't handle. Okay, the tzibur gezerah that people can't do. It's too hard for people, so it's not a gezerah. You can't make a gezerah like that. It's going to lead to problems. Look, it just you can't do it. You have that in halacha also. I mean, gezerahs are are based upon certain practical measures, and the Rabbanon are trying to protect the Torah. So protecting mitzvahs, protecting Shabbos and destroying milah is no great idea. So you have to properly weigh the factors. So Chachamim are careful before they're just going around knocking out mitzvahs. It's true they knocked out shofar and lulav and megillah, but it was with thought. They decided it was worth it. But it does the thing is that milah is not worth it. And you say, is milah more significant than those? Yeah, there are 13 verses on milah, and there are only 3 verses on the whole Torah. So apparently, that chazal certainly seems to indicate that milah is more significant than the whole Torah. So therefore, they didn't want to knock it out. Now, of course, I would think that if you told me that it was a 90% chance that a gilgulah you end up carrying and violating Shabbos, I can't imagine that milah would be worth it, even milah. I mean, you can't just. But the whole thing itself is not very likely. So the proportions are such that, depending on what mitzvah it is, apparently it's you do or do not make a gzera. But that's what's interesting. You don't usually see this side of gzeras, that there's like an economics involved. You know, like a risk reward assessment in making gzeras. Usually, you just think of it: is there a chashash, or the concern, is it not a concern? See, it's more complicated than you would think. So it's like the answer I'm giving, that's why I was kind of saying, I'm not so much giving an answer as much as I'm deducing from Tosfos what you must say. Because Tosfos is saying that since it's more chosel chomer, we don't want to knock it out. So I'm saying is, so you see apparently that what you're knocking out is a factor in gezeros. But I mean, I'm not saying much. I'm just saying what Tosfos is saying. I mean, I'm trying to make it make a little sense, but just showing you from your world of experience that type of thing is true, and you do that. But more deducing from Tosos a factor about, you know, a principle about gezeros, which you wouldn't necessarily do. No, you know what I mean? I'm not so much giving a big answer here. You know what I'm saying is, your problem on Tosos is you have a premise that's not a factor. And the answer is you have to revise that premise. That premise is leading you to a mistake. But you see clearly Tosos holds it is a factor. And then you think about it, it's... makes sense. Why shouldn't that be a factor? Okay, so that's the easy part, I think. The harder part is, I guess, a little bit more philosophical. Right? Because, I mean, he's asking, now he's saying his meal is really important. I mean, what does important mean? Important seems to mean, like, philosophically, it's a very significant mitzvah. Right? And these Ramams and Mila certainly seem philosophical. I mean, how many times the bristles were? I mean, what's that? What does it even mean? What is a bris? And I guess that's our first question. I mean, why is milah so important? But well, it's two questions. Why is milah so important? Like you see, even beforehand, he said it's so important. Avraham Avinu was only complete by milah, and goyim it's disgusting not to have milah, and Moshe Rabbeinu was almost killed for milah, and there are all these brises on milah. So what's going on here? Okay, good. So maybe just to go with the develop more of Danny's approach to saying is that that see, if you'd have to ask what is the essence of our relationship to God. Okay. So I'll give you two choices. Is it perfection or mitzvos? Perfection. Okay. Mitzvos are something more than that. Maybe a vehicle of perfection, something, maybe a method of teaching the world ideas about perfection. Okay, but the essence of the foundation of the relationship between the God and man is insofar as man lives a life of perfection and reaches heights in human perfection and knowledge of subordinating one's instinct and the life pursuit of knowledge, removal from avodah zarah, that whole world of values, the perfection of a person is primary, and that is the primary relationship between man and between God and man, and the idea of a bris. See, I think the idea of bris is. I think Rebbe's talked about this. Is like it's a simple pshat. It's a covenant, it's a treaty. Right? What does it mean? It's a mashal, whatever. What does a treaty mean? treaties like you guys agree, this side agrees this, and that side agrees that. Right? So what does that mean? It means that God is saying is that if you do mitzvahs milah, or if you do the Torah, then I will give you so-and-so brachos, I'll give you so-and-so good benefits. There'll be a special hashkacha. As God is revealing in a bris, God is revealing to the recipient of the bris, like a pattern of hashkacha, pattern of providence, is that insofar as man lives a certain life and embodies a certain perfection, then they will be a recipient of a certain type of a providence. Okay, but more than would be, would be naturally dictated. That's the idea of a bris. It's like a two-sided commitment. You Jews keep the Torah. You're a spokesman to the world about the proper way to live. Then you will receive great benefits. You'll get rain in its time, like in Ayam Shema, in Shema. You'll receive the rain and all the protection, and all of the land will be successful and fruitful, and all these, you'll destroy all your enemies, and that's the bris. That if insofar as you are vehicles of teaching the world about God, then you will, as a bris of Torah, you'll receive benefits. And via the opposite is also true, if not, not. So, and similarly to Avraham Avinu, insofar as you live a life of perfection, then you will have Ashkacha, you will embody and you'll bring about a nation, and there will be a whole nation of people that will come from you and will build towards Am Yisrael, towards the nation of the Jews. So the idea of a bris is the relationship between man and God. Is the relationship meaning that man lives a certain life and there are benefits that he attains through God's providence. Now what it's saying is that the primary providence which God gives to man is not based upon his keeping of 613 mitzvahs, but is based upon his perfection. See, well, like the Ram says before, is that the mitzvah of milah, apparently it says Avraham Avinu was not called complete until the mitzvah of milah. So apparently the mitzvah of milah is like, Avraham Avinu certainly was a very perfected person until that point. But mitzvah of milah, somehow, you'd have to go into this. I'm not sure exactly how, but it involves the heights of human perfection. The full, complete perfection of his character was brought about and realized through the mitzvah of milah. Okay, through doing the mitzvah of milah, for Avraham Avinu to do the mitzvah of milah, that was brought him to a height which he was previously incapable of. Okay, why it is a different question. Maybe because one idea is that it curbs the instincts. Somehow I think it has something to do with the denying of Avodah Zarah. And they're different. You could get into different philosophical benefits of milah. I don't know all those things, and I'm just trying to deduce what we can see here. It's a pasuk. It says, "Salech l'panavei summon should go before me and be complete, perfect." So apparently, in mitzvahs milah, it was like the culmination of the perfection of Adam, and God was showing Avraham Avinu that the 13 brises is the multifaceted hashkacha which will emerge, which will fall upon a person who partakes of all the benefits, all the perfections of milah. Could be 13 things or 13 facets to the perfection that milah brings about. Or 13 benefits that a person could receive through the perfections of milah. I don't know exactly how it is, but it means that it's a multi, the hashkacha, the system. It could be a revelation about the system of hashkacha which comes to a person based upon his embodying the perfection of a person. I don't really know. That was the limit for Avraham Avinu. Apparently, when he told Avraham Avinu this whole parsha where he repeated the word bris 13 times, he wasn't just repeating the word bris 13 times, but he was developing the different facets and dimensions of the bris. Remember, the whole Klal Yisrael emerged out of Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu was basically the progenitor of all Klal Yisrael, and everything which happened to Klal Yisrael afterwards was based upon Hashgacha to Avos and to Avraham Avinu originally. So you see, it could be God was showing him how he will develop the nation, how the nation will develop from him based upon his perfection. So, of course, it's a limud which is for Avraham Avinu, and exactly how it works and all the different ideas and whatever. But the idea is that, it could be it's saying is that the essential the essential basis of the Jewish people and the relationship between God and Jewish people was really set down by Avraham Avinu, because that was where like the perfection of the person, that where people who which embody the heights of perfection, was really set up through the Mitzvah Mila, which was given to Avraham Avinu. And when we do Mila, we're thinking back to that perfection and to the perfection of Avraham Avinu, and partaking of that, entering into that bris. The bris is, so far as you do Mitzvah Mila, you will partake of these hashgachas. Of course, depending on varying degrees, depending on your level and all that, but we're involving ourselves in that institution. Now, it could be what happens is after that, that was the idea, is that many more than the whole Torah. It means, like, the Torah was, so to speak, realizing, finishing out. There were certain facets which perfection does not, perfection alone, certain hashgachas that you can be as perfected as you want, but you're not going to have certain hashgachas. The hashgachas which are based upon the idea of the whole Torah. The fact that we are a nation which keeps the entire system of Torah in all its facets, and it's, you can be as perfected as you want without a body of the Torah and a nation keeping this life of Torah and halacha, so that you won't be able to move people in the same type of a way. So the saying is that there was a bris in Klal Yisrael. When you're given the Torah, there's also a bris. An additional dimension is that we're not just an Am who's perfected, but we're an Am, a nation who keeps the entire mitzvahs, all the mitzvahs. And all the mitzvahs serve as models and lessons. First of all, they give us perfection, but they also, they serve to be, to people know that the Jews keep kosher, and people realize it brings to people's minds that there's a value in curbing one's instincts. So that's an idea that's brought to the world through the fact that the Jewish people keep kosher. You know what I mean? And of course, the degree that the Jews live properly, then every mitzvah would be a limud and a lesson about true ideas and true way of life and true ideas about God through the Torah. So that insofar as we do keep the Torah, there's a new dimensions of hashkacha which are brought about, which would not exist to Avraham Avinu alone. There are new dimensions. But the essence, the essential hashgacha, was really laid down at Mila, which is essentially based upon the perfection of a person. And Torah is like the icing, and develops apparently three new aspects, which again, I don't know what they are, but there are three new aspects of the relationship between God and man. But the fundamental, the basis of the relationship is in Mila, and therefore when we do mitzvahs Mila, so then we're involved in that. We're involved in thinking about that idea. And we're tracing ourselves back to the Avos and to the lives and the perfection that they lived and to the relationship to God based upon those perfections. Oh, and that's why it says that Arla is disgusting. So it means a person without that is a person. Mila it reflects perfection, and Arla reflects lack of perfection, just not living like an animal. Now the antithesis of perfection. So it says, like, Goyim live a life of instinctual, and the Jews of Mila live a life of perfection. So like it became like a reflection. Mila reflects the perfection of a person, and Arla reflects a totally instinctual lack of perfection of a person. Now, so it could be it's saying is that since Mitzvah Mila is so significant, that it reflects that this mitzvah reflects, like this is what you're saying, Danny, it reflects the foundation of all the rest of the mitzvah. So the whole Torah is based upon Mitzvah Mila, which is based upon the perfection of a person. So therefore, they didn't want to compromise Mitzvah Mila. It's not so, you shouldn't be so quick to compromise Mitzvah Mila and to say that one out of every seven milas will be done not in the imperfect form. To say it's going to be done not in its time. It's part of the perfection of the mitzvah is that you do it properly. Once you start doing it not in its time, so now you're delaying the mitzvah and you're not doing it in its way. Apparently I don't know why. I mean, you have to study the mitzvahs. What's the idea of doing it in its time? But that was the time that Avraham Avinu was commanded to do it. And that was the mitzvah when mitzvah was done. So to do it in an imperfect way, it takes away from the concept of the perfection of the mitzvah. So the saying is that it's not just once in a while. If you did this, you'd say that one out of every seven milas is not done perfectly. So you'd be institutionalizing an imperfect mitzvah mila. And apparently the Chazal and I were not so quick to do that. Because of the significant lessons involved in the mitzvah mila and the person, the great perfection which is embodied in the mitzvah, they didn't want to let a person just categorically push it aside one out of every seven times. But shofar, I mean, it's interesting, the shofar and those are particulars, and Shabbos is more important than those particulars. Apparently it's not worth it. But milah is not just a particular, it is the cornerstone of the Torah. I mean, it is just fascinating, even to push it aside for a day. But I think the idea to push it aside for a day is that you're compromising the mitzvah. I mean, we don't, it's partially about this because we don't understand why it is the idea of doing it in that time. Exactly. What's the idea of doing it in its time? What's so significant about that? But it must be there's an idea in that. You know, but it could be also just the idea it's you want the mitzvah to be perfect. The whole sense of mitzvah of perfection, you don't want to do it in a subpar manner. That itself is like you see, there's an idea of doing mitzvah of milah right away, first thing in the morning. I mean, there's we do we're like Zohar and mitzvah milah, like that. You know, even though you can do it all day, you see, there's like a halacha you're supposed to be Zohar. I think a specific halacha by milah, do it quick. So it could be it's because it has a sort of perfection in it. It is like a milah mitzvah, which I guess it's a mitzvah which particularly brings to mind. And I guess I'm saying every mitzvah involves perfection. But this like brings to mind apparently the totality of perfection. Because that's what Avram Avinu, this mitzvah really brought Avram to the heights of perfection. So somehow, I mean, Danny says it's true, it's like Gaon mentions, is that it curbs your instincts. So it shows the idea that we curb our instincts for the sake of directing our energies towards Chachma. Right, like it lessens the sexual enjoyment, he says. So that's an idea of overcoming or the subordinating, a certain degree of subordination of the instinctual. But that's one idea. I mean, there are many ideas. I can't remember. I heard once a Rebbe talking about how it's like a denial of Zara also, somehow. Can't remember exactly how. But, I mean, I guess you could study Mrs. Mila. I don't know. I'm just kind of deducing. As much as, you know, I'm not filling in the blanks. I'm just saying what it seems to be is, you know, these points are indicating. But, I mean, it's open pasuk. It's halachah 5, ve'yisamim. Go before me and be complete. And it says he wasn't called complete until he did this mitzvah. So apparently this mitzvah embodies the height of perfection. So, that mitzvah is not just a particular perfection. It's more fundamental. Yeah, I mean, it is interesting. I mean, I'm not sure about this, but like it could be by saying Moshe Rabbeinu was, you know, he was almost killed for it. It's like, you can't have Moshe Rabbeinu if he's not built upon the Avos. You know what I mean? Like, built upon Avram Avinu and the Bris. So it could be it's saying is like, Moshe Rabbeinu is stage two. The Avos is stage one, set the stage of the perfection. And then after that, you have Moshe Rabbeinu, who developed that in the Torah. You know what I mean? But it's like if Moshe Rabbeinu is lax in mitzvahs milah, and milah reflects the avos and the perfection of the avos, so then he couldn't exist. He exists on the shoulders of the avos, so to speak. You know, even though he's the greatest navi and whatever, but that's true. Not to take away from Moshe Rabbeinu, but it's saying is that apparently that if that's what's saying is the milah is so chamor that if you would imagine like negating it even for 1 minute, even Moshe Rabbeinu, then you couldn't have Torah, you couldn't have Moshe Rabbeinu. So saying is like the whole Torah rests on Mila. And you can't, if Moshe Rabbeinu for 1 second was forgetting about Mrs. Mila, then he couldn't exist. Because he can't have the whole Torah. The whole Torah can't exist without the platform of perfection and the Avos. So we're always still talking about the Avos, you know. They set the stage for it. The Torah is a development on that. I mean, it is interesting. It's like a person, you know, it's like you have to have the right attitude towards mitzvahs. Because on the one hand, they're a God-given system, and it's the best vehicle of perfection, and it's we're obligated to keep them, and we're either a vehicle of us teaching the world ideas, you know. But it's like you can't, like there are people who forget about the perfection of mitzvahs, and it's just like, look, we're just doing what God said, you know, and they don't realize the great opportunity of how every mitzvah is an opportunity for perfection. So some people forget about the underlying idea behind mitzvahs and just relate to it like religious performances. You know, it's like you're following the rules and, you know, like you get your checks and you don't realize, I mean, you can't forget this. The idea of the whole mitzvahs is the significance of mitzvahs is the perfection that they afford to us and to those who see them in us. So, I mean, milah reflects that. Milah is the mitzvah which is the basis of the mitzvahs. Okay, is there any questions? I guess we'll stop here. What I'd like to do next time, I guess this will be next week. I don't know what to talk about, so I'm Gedalia.
Right, next time is Tzomi Dalia. In theory, it's a fast day. Is everyone game? So we'll do it next time. It's further in the Tosfos. Further in the Tosfos in Megillah talks about how you could blow shofar on Yom Kippur, end of Yom Kippur. On the same problem, maybe you'll carry the shofar. Okay, so you can look at that Tosfos there. Okay, it's funny Tosfos. Something's tricky about it, you'll see. It's not so easy to understand what his answer is. There's like two questions. It's not clear what his two questions are and what his answers are. Two answers, two questions, you'll see. It's a little tricky. Okay?